This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Could education act like medicine for your brain? That's the question that an epidemiologist and a physician at Johns Hopkins are considering. In a new study published in the journal Neurology, they looked at the effect a person's level of education had on her ability to recover from a traumatic brain injury. Two of the researchers join me now to talk about it. Dr. Eric Schneider is the study leader. He's an epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine's Center for Surgical Trials and Outcomes Research. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And Dr. Robert Stevens is a physician with Johns Hopkins Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care Medicine. Thanks for being with us.
I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand you've been examining what you call cognitive reserve. Dr. Stevens, can you explain what that is?
Yes. So cognitive reserve is a term that is used to describe the differential effects that we observe in patients with a given disease based on the amount of pathology in their brain. So in other words, the first time that this was really characterized was in patients with dementia, with Alzheimer's disease. And what has been noted is that the amount of pathology in your brain is not a very good predictor of how bad you appear clinically. So the clinical symptoms and signs of dementia are not very well correlated with the amount of disease that is present inside your brain. And so this suggests that there are other mechanisms that are potentially driving a person's response or ability to compensate for neurological disease. And one of these we believe to be cognitive reserve. So it refers essentially to the intrinsic ability of the brain to adapt or to compensate for an underlying process. Again, it's been primarily described in patients with chronic neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's disease or multiple sclerosis or HIV encephalopathy. So building on those studies, we thought it would be interesting to evaluate a very different scenario, which is younger patients who are not necessarily suffering from a neurodegenerative disorder, but are actually recovering from a traumatic brain injury. And so our basic hypothesis is, or was, that cognitive reserve may be one of the drivers of the recovery after TBI, after traumatic brain injury.
Let me pull Dr. Schneider in and ask, so you found that there was a correlation between level of education and the ability of these young patients to bounce back after a traumatic brain injury.
That's correct. We looked at education across three different levels. We looked at folks who had less than 12 as our comparison group, less than 12 years of education.
Less than a high school.
In the U.S., that's correct. We looked at a second group who were individuals who had 12 to 15 years of education, which would correlate to those who'd finished high school but probably hadn't achieved a bachelor's level education. And we looked at a third group, those who had 16 or more, those who had sufficient years of education to likely have completed a bachelor's degree. And what we discovered was a very strong association between the level of education and the likelihood of recovering fully, as described using a disability rating scale, from their injury. In other words, at the end of 1 year, those with a substantially greater education were statistically significantly more likely to be adjudicated as having no residual disability on the disability rating scale than those who were educated at less than a high school level. And the odds actually of full recovery were seven times greater among those with a college-level education versus those with fewer years than equivalent to high school.
So in other words, somebody who has a college degree and is potentially engaged in a graduate program has, according to these data at least, has a sevenfold greater likelihood of achieving full recovery after traumatic brain injury than someone who never finished high school. So it was also an interesting finding in our data.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Eric Schneider, an epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and with Dr. Robert Stevens, a physician with Johns Hopkins Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care Medicine. We're talking about a study they authored on the effect of education on a patient's ability to recover from traumatic brain injury. you made the point that part of why you started this research was that there has been research on diseases of dementia, like Alzheimer's, which more often than not we're talking about older folks. You were looking at younger brains. Is there a point at which the cognitive reserve of our brains is kind of set, or are our brains changing constantly as we live?
Yeah, I would answer that the brain is constantly changing. So one of the most remarkable features of the, you know, the central nervous system is that it has this property of plasticity, which means that it's constantly able to adapt and change in response to both external factors, so changes in the environment, changes in stimulation, in response to processes such as learning and memory, and in response to changes such as acquiring new skills and talents and so forth. So the brain is a very plastic organ, and this plasticity is seen, it used to be, the thought was conveyed that this is something that was relatively confined to youth and to childhood. But in fact, we know now that even the adult brain and even in the aging brain, there are very robust mechanisms of plasticity. Now, what's even more interesting is that in response to injury, so for example, if you have a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury, or if you have a stroke, there is also an injury-associated plasticity which occurs, much of neuroscience today is very interested in trying to better characterize this lesion or injury-induced plasticity, because if we can harness that, that's going to give us the key to developing treatments for neurological diseases.
Public radio listeners are treated to quite a lot of underwriting for brain games. In particular, I think there's one called Luminosity. Lumosity, that's right. Do those brain games have anything to do with your findings?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have heard about Lumosity and other similar programs. I think those programs are based on, a relatively sound rationale. There isn't a great deal of really good science demonstrating the benefit of those programs. There are other variables that appear to be hugely predictive as well, and one of them is, being existing within a robust familial and social network and being able to engage actively with other human beings. And so I think the concept of this idea that you can just sit in a room and do Lumosity and that it's going to make you, it's going to build up your cognitive reserve and make you stronger in terms of your ability to resist the effects of aging and disease is somewhat misguided. That's not the only thing that's going to be important. There's also a huge amount of value in being, living within a society and engaging with others in social interactions do seem to play a very important role in building up the inherent capacities of the brain.
So interesting. Thank you so much for walking us through it. Dr. Eric Schneider is an epidemiologist at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine's Center for Surgical Trials and Outcomes Research. Dr. Robert Stevens is a neurointensive physician with Johns Hopkins Department of Anesthesiology and Critical Care Medicine. We have a link to their study in the journal Neurology on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us on 88.1.